Okay, we're going to begin now. Thanks so much, everyone, for coming. I'm just going to explain very briefly how the structure is going to work of the panel, and then we'll get to it. So as you see, the questions on the sheet are broken up into some categories. So what we're going to do is we're not going to go one question at a time, because we probably won't finish if we do that, but we're going to go in order of section. So each panelist is going to speak about addressing any number of issues that he feels that he can speak to in that category, and then we'll go on. We'll go in order of the panelists, and then we'll do the same thing for each category. And then at the end, after they've each spoken about for a few minutes in each category, if there are any more questions on the sheet or in your mind that haven't been addressed, we can. We'll open the floor to you guys for your questions. So I just want to thank our panelists for coming. We have Rabbi Maccabee Avishur of the, or Rabbi Mack, as his students called him, of the University School Partnership Institute here at Yeshiva University. I'm sure he'll tell you a little bit about that when he speaks. Rabbi Benny Krohn, who is an assistant rabbi at Congregation Reunite Yisrael in Teaneck and a teacher at TABC. And Rabbi Yitzhak Techin, who is a teacher at SAR Academy. We'll just begin now. Rabbi Mateshin will begin just to give a very brief introduction, and then we'll go to Rabbi Mack, and then to Rabbi Krohn.
Okay. So I may have the least teaching experience of the people on the panel, even though I'm probably older than the rest of the panel combined. I took a very circuitous route to get here. I attended every Yeshiva University school possible, including Reitz and Cardozo. I grew up, my parents were teachers / mechanchim, and I grew up knowing that I wanted to go into that business, but there was no way I was going to go into that business, because who can make a living? I won't take you through the whole boring story, but I was... I entered the business world after law school. I was also in the Kiruv world at the same time. I was the outreach director at KJ for Congregation Kehilat Cheshire on the Upper East Side for a number of years. I've been teaching Torah on the Upper East Side for almost 19 years at this point. And at a certain point, after a different business careers, which were meaningful, can't say I got rich from them, but they were definitely, I would call them, successful from a number of perspectives. I seized the opportunity that was presented to me to finally live out my dream and to go into chinuch full-time and go into business part-time. That's my story.
All right, my name is Maccabee Avishur. I work at the school partnership on the second floor of that big building right there, Belfer. This is my first year at YU. I did not go here undergrad. I did not get my smicha here or anything like that. I spent the last decade and a half as a teacher and a school leader in schools in California, Texas, and Michigan. And I've come here because I want to affect the field in a larger way. And one of the things I do with the school partnership is work with aspiring teachers to help them learn about the field of education. And that might be a surprise to some people that it's actually a field, right? It's not just something you do because you couldn't do anything else. It's one of the hardest fields to master in the world. And I also work with schools and teachers to help them find, like in shidduchim, kind of, to find one another, right? To help teachers find jobs and schools to find teachers, as well as working with teachers in the field to help them get better at what they do.
Good morning, afternoon, here we are. My name is Benny Krohn. I have two jobs. I work as the assistant rabbi in Congregation Reunite Yisrael. I'm also a rebbe in TABC. I teach Chumash and Mishnah, and I'm the chesed coordinator in the school also. I guess part of the reason I'm here is because after graduating YU, I went to be an assistant rabbi in Charleston, South Carolina, which obviously is different than being an assistant rabbi in Teaneck, New Jersey. While in Charleston, I was the assistant rabbi there, but I also spent a lot of time teaching. I taught in the school there. So I definitely have a little bit of experience in terms of the difference between someone who wants to go. I find this phrase, you know, I don't like the phrase out of town. I'm from out of town. I'm from Boston originally. But if you want to go out of town, which is a great place to go, out of town's a great place, you want to go to that place called out of town, so there's a lot to offer out of town, there's a lot to be offered here, and we'll speak hopefully a little bit about the opportunities to do both, and also the opportunities, what happens for a person who wants to be in chinuch, and also have another job, how that can affect you as well.
Okay, so Maccabee, if you could speak about the question section one, we'll get started, and then we'll move on to Mateshin and Ceramic Front.
Right. So one of the great things about working in the office I work in now in the school partnership is that we have this wide view of the whole field. We work with over 200 day schools. By the way, does anyone know how many day schools there are in North America? Take a guess.
Over 200.
Over 200, yes, good.
Where's that?
Jewish day schools.
500.
Getting there. 800. There are over 800 Jewish day schools, the vast majority of which fall under the Orthodox umbrella. But that could include Hasidish, right, Yeshiva, and Modern Orthodox slash centrist, if you want to call them that. They're a much smaller percentage come from the other movements. So there are over 250,000 Jewish day school students, right? That's a ton of people, so it's a humongous field, right? And the average school has anywhere between 100 to 200 students, although some schools are much larger. You might have gone to one, and some are fewer than 100 students. But the average school leader is managing a budget of about $5 million, right? That's the operating budget of an average school, and managing between 30 to 40 employees, right? So that skill set needs to be in your mind when you think about what it means to run a school. It's basically running a business in the nonprofit sector, and I want you to think about that. The most important employees in the school, although some would argue are the principals, we believe are the teachers, right? Because those are the people who are on the ground working with the students every day, and a school's mission is to deliver education to students, right? To help students learn. And so people like Rabbi Mateshin said, well, you can't make a living doing that. So I want to dispel that rumor. It's not actually true. A question we hear very often is, how much can a beginning teacher make? Very simple answer. I don't know. Because it differs from school to school. However, I can give you a range, although the range is not so meaningful because it's large. Okay? In all the schools we work with, a person can expect to earn as a first-year teacher anywhere between $35,000 to up to $50,000 as a first-year teacher with no experience. Okay? In the New York area, approximately $45,000 is the average starting salary. Okay? So that's actually a living wage. If you're going to live up here in the Heights, right? It really is, right? If you're going to live in Teaneck, it's probably not a living wage if you're the only earner in your family. It's important to keep that in mind. Teachers, the second part of that first question here is, what's the typical progression, right? Teacher salaries grow at an approximate rate of 1.5 to 3% a year if no other responsibilities are taken on in the subsequent year. If you're just going to, you're teaching five classes and that's all you're going to do every year, you can expect your salary to grow at a rate of about 1.5% on average. Right? So you do the math and you'll see that in 10 years from now, if you started at $45,000, you'll be earning. No Cy Sims guys here?
$42,000.
Yes. Okay. That wage increase is in keeping with what most other fields offer as well. Right? Someone said here, like, I know that an accountant makes about $45,000 to $65,000, right? That I think, right, it's actually in keeping with what most teachers earn, right? The average accountant salary is about $65,000, right? Although some can be earning much more than that and some can be earning a little bit less than that. And that's true for teachers as well. The average teacher who's been in the field for X number of years could be earning around $65,000. Okay? Most Jewish day schools, particularly in the modern Orthodox / centrist Orthodox world, offer competitive benefits packages. And these are phrases that might actually be completely foreign to you. You might have never heard about PPOs and HMOs, because probably you're all on your parents' plans now, thanks to Obamacare, until you're 26. Right? How many of you are on your own health plans? Okay, two or three hands, right? How many of you are on your parents' health care plan right now? Great, good. Right? In a few years from now, you'll be paying for your own health care. And most Jewish day schools offer some form of health benefit. Okay? And you have to be thinking about that as when you go into the field.
Can I just add one more point to that? One of the things that, if you're in this meeting, that means you're learning focus, and that's the direction for the, it may not be the profession you're going into, but certainly that's a lot of where your focus is. You owe it to yourselves if you're going to pursue this profession or any other profession, but even if you're in this profession and you're a learning guy, you still owe it to yourselves to educate yourselves about things such as healthcare and understanding what benefits are. Because it's something that can vary from school to school, and while the salary may, you may say, well, this salary is $45,000. This one's $46,000. All right, there's another $1,000. The package or the benefits that are being brought by the $45,000 school might be worth a lot more to you than the $46,000 school. So part of your responsibility to yourselves is to educate yourselves about, and we'll talk about it a little bit more later, we talk about parsonage, we talk about healthcare benefits, we talk about the different types of plans that are involved, 401k, right? You're not all going to be able to teach forever, right? So you have to be able to prepare even at your age. You have to at least educate yourselves, even if you can't do a lot for your retirement, understand what it involves in order to prepare for a retirement.
Right. I'm so happy that Robert Mitchin mentioned that. This concept of being a learner is not limited to Torah. Right? You have to educate yourself. One of the things we do in our office is help you learn about that. You should please do not be a stranger to our office. There are some guys out there, and I don't mean this in an offensive way, right, who are, I don't want to say conceited, but they're going to do it on their own. They're going to get a job on their own. They're going to get an offer on their own. And they're going to do it all on their own. And they don't seek out our help. It's a mistake. You lose nothing by working with our office, and you only stand to gain. The worst thing you can lose is a half an hour of talking to me. And I'm a fun guy to talk to. So please come and talk to our office. It's really, really a valuable thing. We can help you learn about these things and point you in the right direction. So Matichin mentioned some of the other benefits that schools do offer, including retirement funds, insurance, including health and dental, life insurance, all those other things. Also, they offer tuition remission in some cases, right? One of the most expensive things about being a Jew is sending your kids to school, right? And some schools will offer competitive tuition remission packages where they will give you an automatic decrease in the amount you'll have to pay if your kid is going to that school. Some schools will even pay for your kid to go to another school if they don't, right, if that doesn't fit for whatever reason. But again, this is all specific to each school. And as Rabbi Mitchin mentioned, you want to make sure you're comparing apples to apples when you're considering what a package looks like from each school. So the third question about Aliyah is an important one. How many of you are considering making Aliyah and being in Chinuch? Okay. So I reached out to a close friend of mine, a guy named Rabbi Friedman from Lev HaTorah. Anyone know that yeshiva Lev HaTorah? Fine. You went there? Great. So Rav Asher, I said to him, tell me what you know. And he said, I wish I had the words here, I'm paraphrasing. He said, I am very fortunate that I have a job full-time and that I can support my family. And I'm an average guy, says Rav Asher. I think he's actually much better than average, but he considers himself an average guy in Israel. He says, I know guys who are far better than I am, who are schlepping from seminar to seminar, yeshiva to yeshiva, trying to piece together some kind of living. It is incredibly competitive in Israel. Right, and it's very hard to make a living there. So if you're considering moving there, make sure there's something else you have to fall back on as well. Right, don't rely on being able to go into chinuch in Israel and make a living there. So it's important to keep that in mind.
Can I just add to that?
Yes, and to that.
That challenge is compounded by a number of things. Besides the fact that there's, for every one of you, there's a number of people in Eretz Yisrael that are competing for the same job. There's also a cultural and social adjustment that you'll have to make, right? So how you operate here is something you're very comfortable with. Operating in Israel is a very different lifestyle. So even if you're somebody who goes without the economic and professional challenges and you're making Aliyah, there's a lot of pressure on the families that go to Israel just to be able to adjust their lives, having kids that will be in the army or will be with, or may not be in the army. We even have to deal with the issue of being in the army and which neighborhood that you live in, because no neighborhood really is exactly the way it's supposed to be. So please understand, when it comes to the pressures that are on an individual and that are on the family, it's not just financial pressures, it's not just professional pressures, trying to find a niche where you'll be appreciated, but there's a lot more pressure that comes from just having made Aliyah and trying to adjust to a new country. And that, again, it's not something that should tell, I'm not trying to say to anybody, you shouldn't make Aliyah because it's that much harder, but make sure you understand what you're doing before you do it, because Bezrat Hashem, you're going to go, I used to say Bezrat Hashem, but now I work in SAR, Bezrat Hashem, you'll be there, and you won't be there by yourself, and there'll be other people in your family that you will be responsible to, not just financially, but emotionally and in other ways as well. So keep in mind that there are a lot, if you're going to be making Aliyah, maybe it's better to make it earlier, just to so that the family will not have the adjustment that you'll have to make if you make it, if you're thinking to do it 5-10 years from now. So it's just going to be that much harder at that point.
Right. The next question, number four, is about general studies versus Jewish studies teachers. And that is an incredibly variable answer. Depends on the school. Certain schools will pay a Rebbe a lot more than they would pay a general studies teacher. And then even within a school, general studies teachers might be earning different things. STEM teachers are much more desirable. Science, technology, math, et cetera, right? Engineering. Are much more desirable and receive higher compensation than English and the liberal arts do in certain schools. So if you actually have both, if you can do Jewish studies and general studies, that is great. So if you're taking classes in whatever you're doing now, and you can capitalize on that experience to be able to teach another subject, particularly if it's English or history or math or science, at a minimum of a 10th grade level, that will really place you well when you enter the field. Yeah.
Speaking about teaching other subjects, let's say if one comes to history, does a person have to have a master's degree in history to teach history? What are schools looking for? Undergrad classes.
Great question. Not, you don't always have to have a master's to teach the subject you want to teach. Most schools in the New York area in particular, but much less so outside of New York, I call it ONY, outside New York, not out of town. Schools in New York want you to be able to teach to the regent, right? So whatever regent's training you need does not require a master's degree. Sometimes you might need a credential, and that can now actually be acquired through Azrieli. That's a new thing. And some schools are more willing to be flexible. Like, so you took several classes in history and you have shown some expertise in European or American history, they will allow you to teach that as well. Just because you took high school history does not mean you're now able to teach that same subject. And some teachers make that mistake. Well, no, I was really good in science in high school, right? And I was going to be a doctor, right? But then I decided to go into chinuch. But I did I got an A in high school chemistry and I got a 5 on the AP. It's not good enough.
Okay. Yeah. I'm sorry, keep... Do you guys mind that I keep butting in? So I think that when it comes to degrees, there's a different perspective. You get a degree for one of two reasons. Either you need the information, you're going to learn something from getting that degree, or the degree is going to be a credential. And that's something to keep in mind. When it comes to your first job, credentials are far more important than when you go further in the profession. So if you've already established yourself as a very competent, more than competent, a very good Judaic studies teacher, math teacher, science teacher, whatever it is, your reputation or what people are saying about you, the parents, students, other people you work with, it's far more effective than being able to say, look, I graduated from this graduate school and, you know, there's something in Latin that's afterwards about how well you did. That is helpful to start, but degrees are valuable. But if you're getting a degree, you should really be focusing, I think. I have no degree. I mean, I have degrees, but none that apply to education. You should really be focusing on what is it that is going to give me the most, what's going to be most valuable to me. And most valuable to me is considering what the profession is looking for, but also who you are and what your makeup is. So if you're somebody who thinks, you know, I'd be a good school counselor, or I want to try to help students deal with the challenges of being a student or being a teenager. So while Azrieli is a very fine school, and I did take a course, and I'm very grateful for having taken that course, it could be that taking a course to getting a degree in social or psychology is what you should be looking at. So that's something to keep in mind as well. You get a degree for either because you want to impress somebody, or you get a degree because you want to learn something. Hopefully the degree you get does both. But knowing yourself is a critical part of this whole process, and even to answer a lot of these questions, we're talking about what you need to live on, etc., etc. That's a personal question. Part of the reason I didn't go to chinuch to start is I couldn't see myself living on a certain salary. That doesn't mean there aren't people who couldn't live on it. I was just a little bit spoiled, and I had certain expectations, which at the time were what I thought I needed in life. So it's very important, again, just to bring it full circle back to the idea of a degree. Knowing yourself is very important. Knowing what you feel your strengths are is important, where your weaknesses are, and how you can improve on your strengths and maybe perhaps work on your weaknesses, something you should consider when you're getting a degree, probably more than saying, gee, which degree is going to impress a hiring principal or director.
Great.
I think in the same note, the multiple, let's say degrees or multiple areas of strength are very helpful. A school loves, schools would much rather have the same person do three jobs than hire three different people. So a school is very happy to see a person who is musically oriented and also a Rebbe. Or they also have, they've worked at camps and done programming, so they're able to work with student activities. I mean, there are a lot of different things that you can bring to the table, and if you're able to vary your strengths and have different types of different skill sets, a school is very happy to see somebody who can fill a lot of spots, not someone who's going to only, I can be your Gemara Rebbe, that's it. So that's good, but if you're a Gemara Rebbe who can do X, Y, and Z, so now they see for an extra $10,000, they'll give you a second job rather than having to hire a new person to do the whole thing. So certainly, in terms of the question of degrees and in general, in terms of skill sets, you want to be broadening your skill sets because then you then bring more to the table.
Great point.
You don't just learn from degrees. That's also to keep in mind. You have to keep in mind, what is it that I need to know? And that's something you're always trying. That's a question you should always be asking yourself. So it's not just in environments where you get degrees that you learn. There are books. There are people. Right? You should be picking the brains of every person you can throughout your career. Throughout your career. I speak to my assistant principal. She's very helpful to me. But I also talk to, I have friends who are in other schools. Some are teachers, some are principals, some are people outside the profession. When I want to talk about issues related to counseling or psychology, there's about five or six guys I talk to on a regular basis. There are books that I read. These are things, when it comes to educating yourself, there are a number of channels, and you really should avail yourselves of all of them.
Excellent points.
This guy's going to say that.
Yeah, go.
Based on what everyone was kind of saying, how important would job experience in, say, if someone wants to be an activities director or school psychologist or something, how important would experience be over maybe a master's degree?
For an activities director, you do not necessarily need a degree in education. Right, you would need a lot of experience, maybe NCSY or whatever it's going to be.
Camps, yeah, people have done a lot of camp work.
Right.
People are very valuable.
To be a psychologist, you would obviously need a psychology experience, so that's a different field. But yeah. All right, so let me just finish this off and we'll get to the question in a second. Is that directly about this, what we just said?
Yeah.
Okay, go.
Just because we were talking about numbers at the very beginning, can you offer some numbers about within schools, say you have those multiple jobs, specifically say if you were a general studies teacher and also Rebbe, or if you are a Rebbe and an activities coordinator, stuff like that, how much of your salary increase?
So, great question. Typically, people will put together two half-time jobs, Rebbe in the morning, second in the afternoon, to fill out a portfolio, to make it a full-time job, which would bring you to that salary on average of 45 as a starting Rebbe, right? If you're adding the activities director job, depending on the school, again, you might be adding between $5,000 to $10,000, or even more, depending on the school. So that could increase your package significantly. It's also going to increase your workload, and I want you to think about that seriously, because school does not stop at 3:30 or 4:30, right? Most new teachers are working until 10, 11, or 12 o'clock every night because it's a very difficult field to master. That certainly drops off after the first few years. You become better at what you do and more experienced, but you're going to be working really hard the first few years you're in the field.
I just want to add to that. That's actually a good example of something where we need to educate ourselves. So two half-time jobs is not one full-time job. Two half-time jobs is not one full-time job, right? Meaning, if I'm a full-time employee, so then it's a certain benefit I get that if I'm not a full-time employee, I might get medical benefits, I may not get medical benefits. Also, when it comes to Social Security tax, I'm not a tax advisor, but when it comes to Social Security tax, if you are considered a part-time employee, who's responsible for your Social Security tax? You are exclusively. However, if you're a full-time employee, so then that's a shared responsibility between the employer and the employee. So having a full-time job is more valuable than having two part-time jobs, and sometimes even having an extra part-time job.
Right. I was thinking about specifically in the school. Like, let's say the school had Rebbe's in the morning and second in the afternoon, or, let's say each period. But Rebbe Teshen is totally right. If you're doing it two separate jobs in two separate schools, you need to be very mindful. And again, seek our advice or seek out the advice of a tax advisor.
Sorry. While we're talking about full-time jobs and the amount of hours, so is it trying to have, let's say, an assistant rabbi job as well as class, having that 45,000.
So we're going to talk about that in the Chinuch Plus section, because that's a really, really important question.
And just one other point, I think. And I think as we're having this conversation about money, it's a very, very important, realistic discussion. And I think that was very, I think, most important. I'm sure you would both agree with me. You're not going into Chinuch or to Rabbanus or to whatever Klei Kodesh you're going into to make a lot of money. If you want to make a lot of money, so generally, you have a record. These are not the areas. I'm not saying you can't make significant money. You can. But it's not a place you're going to make a ton. And why am I saying that? I'm saying it because if a person is making a decision to go into this profession, it has to be because you love it. If you're doing it because you like to learn, you love learning, this is the wrong profession. Teaching is not learning. It's different. It's very different. If you want to be in a profession that learns, so be an accountant, you'll have a couple hours to learn at night, you'll learn a lot more than if you're a Rebbe. I have a little bit of time. I have a chavrus in the middle of the day. I'm lucky by my schedule. But most people I know who are Rebbeim, full-time Rebbeim, certainly rabbis, spend very little time learning for themselves. Not the same thing for a parashir and to sit down and learn Gemara Ksuvos. It's different. And if you are not invested that this is what I want to do in my life, I want to inspire young men and women to want to be from kids, to teach them how to learn a Gemara, teach them how to learn a Mishnah. If this is not something you love to do, you are going to be burned by the fact that you're not making close to what your friend who went into business is making. And if you want to live somewhere where other people live, and you have guys who are making $300,000, $400,000, $500,000 a year, and you're making $100,000 or $150,000 between you and your wife, and you're not happy with what you're doing, you're going to spend your whole time watching those people and feeling bad for yourself. But if you love what you do, then you'll be proud of what you do. You'll be happy with it. So it's so, so important to recognize, to be realistic about it. I think you can make a decent living. I think we're all happy where we are. But we're happy where we are because we love what we do. And if you love what you do and you're invested in it and you take time to master it, then you'll make enough money to get by and you'll be fine. But if you don't love it, then that part can hurt.
So important. That's
you guys are standing in the back. There's some seats here in the front if you want.
So what Rabbi Kern was saying is really important. It's the idea of how much money you're going to earn as a couple can be really important as well. So thinking about that base salary that I had mentioned earlier for a beginning teacher, if you and your wife are both earning around 40 or 45, that's a very decent take-home salary for what we call dinks, right? Double income, no kids, right? That's, you're living large. If you've got $90,000,
no kids,
right? But then you'll have,
I have seven incomes and five kids.
Exactly. And then you're going to have some kids, but your salaries will continue to grow. And you're not going to, unless you're a school leader, right? You're not going to be making in the double six figures, if you know what I mean by that, like $200,000, $300,000. Although there are some school leaders out there who are making $200,000, even occasionally $300,000. Right, those are very few and far between. So that's not to be your aspiration, right? Oh, I'm doing this because I'm going to be the $300,000 school leader. But many families are earning over six figures and are living decent lives. Again, you're not going to be rich, as Rabbi Kron said.
You'll be really rich
in Olam Hazeh. You're going to be rich in Olam Hava, right? Exactly. That's the point. The last question in this particular section is an incredibly important one and a sensitive and personal topic. Okay, affording to send your kids to school is a challenge, right? School tuition in this area for, let's say, elementary and middle school, which is the age most of your kids will be for the next 10 years or so, is about $15,000 per child, right? That is a ton of money, okay? And if you and your wife are making $100,000 combined, say goodbye to 15% of your salary, right away, not including the building fund, etc. What?
Per kid.
Per kid, per child. You only have one child, right? So let's say it's two kids, $30,000, right? You get the $100 discount, though, for the second child. So it's $29,900. So,
which that kid will spend twice.
Exactly. A person who's going into Klei Kodesh is, to my belief, and I might be a single mind on this, a Das Yachid, is entitled to tuition assistance. You are dedicating your life to helping the Jewish people, and the community needs to step up and help you. If you are not earning enough money, right, to afford a mortgage, Shabbos food, obviously regular food and normal clothing, and a car for you and your wife, I'm not saying you're driving a Lexus, right, and tuition, then the community has to step forward. I'm not saying you need to go on a cruise. That's a luxury, right? I'm not saying you need to fly back to see your wife's parents in Australia every year or go to Israel twice a year. Those are all luxuries, right? But the basic necessities, and which includes tuition, if you cannot afford those things, you should not feel like, ugh, I don't know what to do. The community will step up and help you. And as I said before, schools offer tuition remission to Rebbe's, right, and often to Mora's as well. So it's something to think about.
I want to just add a little bit further along that path. I think it goes more than just, this is not just your feeling. And I think the community as a whole understands, the community has a sense of responsibility when it comes to its mechanchim. And you shouldn't feel, if you have to go to apply for tuition assistance, that you're asking for tzedakah, or that you have to show that you have to feel like you're a shmat or anything like that. There's a certain understanding within the dynamics of our community. You're going to go into a profession where it's not the highest paying profession, but they want the finest, brightest, and most talented people to go into that profession, and they give you the thing they treasure the most, their children. That's what the expectation is. There's an understanding, therefore, within the dynamics of the community that if somebody is a Rebbe or a teacher, that the community has a certain responsibility. I will say within our Tina community, I know the different schools, and I know different people who are on the committees that are involved in these things. The people that I've seen in our community have a tremendous sense of Hakaras HaTov. They have an understanding of what their responsibility is. And nobody from here should feel like if you're going to give us tuition assistance, like you're asking for charity. That's not what it is. There's an understanding that's within the community. This is the nature of your profession. As somebody who's in this profession, you're going to have these kinds of needs. The community has this sense of responsibility. And for the most part, they handle this responsibility properly and with derech eretz. So you shouldn't feel less because you have to do this. This is just part of the dynamics of the profession. The other thing I just want to add is where you teach and where your kids go to school might be to your benefit as well. So if you're teaching in a school, which is a type of school that you would send your children to, that works out very, very well because the school that you're working in can be even more helpful than a school that you're not working in. So that's something to keep in mind as well. Now, you don't have to, in your first job, say, okay, I want to send my kid to, you know, this yeshiva, therefore I got to get a job at that yeshiva. There's time before that kid's going to be in yeshiva. Things change between now and then. You don't have to pick your school based on that. But once you start having kids, it's something to keep in mind that the school that you might want to apply to, and one of the things you might want to consider is this the type of school where I can send my children? If so, there's going to be a benefit to me as well if I get a job in that school and I send my kids there.
Just also realize practically, if you apply for tuition assistance, it's not like the whole community or the whole school knows that you've applied for tuition assistance. You apply for it privately. There's a private committee which sends all these things very confidentially. So every person in your community doesn't know, oh, that's the Rebbe who gets, you know, X amount tuition. No one has to know that. It's not something that everybody knows necessarily. Not every Rebbe necessarily does it. But for those who do, it doesn't necessarily mean that people are going to know that. It's not something to be ostracized for. So you just should know in general. These things are done in the community that way for other families who need it. And if you're joining yourself in that group, you should know it's done in a very confidential way.
And I want to use this as a segue into the part that Rabbi Kron will talk about also, which is the out-of-town piece. Right, Bergen County, where we all send our kids. Not really. Where do you send your kids?
Then Bergen.
Yeah, I guess
Bergen. Yeah, two in Bergen, yeah.
Is a complete anomaly.
My money's flying all over the world.
Is a complete anomaly as far as tuition assistance percentages are concerned. On average, approximately 20% of the students in those schools are on tuition assistance. That is a very low number. Outside of Bergen County, the number is closer to 40, and even up to 60 or 70% of families are on tuition assistance, right? So I want you to think about that. And that is even more true out of town, and you will be treated even better out of town as a teacher than you have the luxury of being treated in town, because there are so many of us here. So, should we talk about?
Sure.
Can we skip to the plus section?
Yeah.
Sure.
And then we'll start with Rabbi Kron.
Sure. Should I speak about out of town in terms of Kenneth first? Out of New York.
ONY.
So we'll talk out of New York. We'll talk for a minute.
With pulpit, whatever.
Both. We'll talk both. So let's just talk out of New York in general. So something that's going to be true in Chinuch, it's true also in the rabbinate, out of town, is that as it as a whole, I can tell you the number of people in my shul who have smicha. It's probably like, I don't know, 100?
At least.
That when you go to a place where there are not as many mechanchim and not as many rabbanim, you are treated in a much different way. People appreciate the fact that you've come there. They know, certainly if you come from New York to go there, they recognize that you've made a sacrifice, you're leaving your family often. You're going someplace where they appreciate you much, much more. I grew up in Boston. We had, you know, people came to teach in the school. You're the one cool Rebbe. You're the two cool Rebbes. You know, you teach in TBC. I'm like, you know, fighting with the coolest guys in the world. You know, and like, oh yes, don't tell me I said that. Seriously, a place like TBC, Frisch, MTA, SAR, all the schools are like, you know, you're superstar, all the superstar guys all in the same place. You go to a place like Boston or Cleveland, it's amazing. You have such an impact in a place like that because you're not a dime a dozen. And that means, A, that you're going to be treated that way, and you feel like you have an impact in an incredible way. And it also means often that they do more, they appreciate even more the needs you have financially, and will be often, you know, much more forthcoming in terms of assisting you, in terms of your own tuition assistance. They won't necessarily pay more because usually the cost of living is lower. But I'll give you an example. My brother, who's now a Rebbe, he and his wife both teach in Eretz Yisrael. They live in Efrat. They both teach in yeshivas there. They both got full-time jobs in yeshivas. They're very lucky. But they lived in Cleveland, and they were both teachers. And they had a great life there. The school helped them with a down payment on the house, and they gave them a interest-free loan. You're not going to come to TBC and ask them for tuition for an interest-free loan for your house. Not going to happen. But in Cleveland, they offered them that, which I think is forgiven if you make Aliyah. And it costs, you know, $200,000. I'm not giving you exact numbers. I'm just estimating. $200,000 to buy a very decent 3-4-bedroom house there. They live right near the shul. They're part of the community. The community's close-knit. It was a really nice life. I went to visit them a lot. It was a fabulous life for teachers. They didn't make a ton of money, but they didn't make a lot less. They didn't feel like they made so much less than everybody else. And I think it's an example of a lot of places out of town where maybe you're giving something up. Don't get me wrong. You're giving up something, whether that's family, whether that's you have to be comfortable with the schools there for your kids. Right, the school you go to teach in, you don't have six. Right now, when I came to TNEX, I had, you know, 4 or 5 different schools to choose from while within 10 minutes from my house. If you go, forget, Charleston, South Carolina was obviously much harder. You have one school, and you hope that one school you can handle it for your kids. But even if you go to places like, you know, Cleveland or Boston or Chicago, or you know, there's maybe 2 schools. So you have to be willing to make that decision and be willing to put your kids in a place that you're comfortable with. But at the same time, the impact you can have is incredible. And very often, you know, certainly a guy also may feel that they're not cut out for high school. You know, that's the you want to teach in high school. High school kids are rough. Certainly in the New York area, I would encourage every single person who has an opportunity, if you think you're going to chinuch, get in a classroom, okay? Because you walk into 10th grade, lowest year in MTA, I'm not kidding, I did it. You get a sense of what it's like teaching high school, right? You're going to go to Noam, you go to YNJ, all of a sudden you're going to see the chutzpah, you're going to see it's a real thing, and it really impacts, and that's less out of town. Kids are sweeter. Never had a behavioral issue out of town. They exist, but much less. In terms of the rabbinate and pulp and chinuch,
something to keep in mind, it applies to this, but also applies to even choosing to go into this profession. These decisions that you make are not necessarily permanent decisions. So if you're going to go ONY to start, you shouldn't really think of it as some sort of life sentence that I'm going to be in, you know, I'm gonna have to ride a donkey to work for forever. This can be a wonderful place to start. It can be wonderful on a number of levels. It can be on an interpersonal level between you and your wife. It can be wonderful for a lot of reasons. Don't think of these decisions as eternal decisions. It becomes much more difficult to make a decision if you think of it as something which can't be reversed or adjusted. So that's something to keep in mind, both in terms of if you're going out of town, but also even in terms of going into this profession. Something you love, something you feel passionate about, that's always going to be the best place for you to be successful. But if you find that at a certain age, you know, it was a great 10 years, it was a great 15 years, there are other things that you can do as well. So I happen to love this. I made the reverse decision. But it's something, if you think of life decisions in terms of them being permanent, they become very, very heavy decisions. Think a little bit shorter term, and you'll be able to think with a lot more clarity.
I just wanted to add to that because it's very important. This idea of going out of town, outside of New York, for 5 years is an incredibly smart move for a beginning educator. There are more opportunities outside New York that will consider you as a first-year teacher than inside this area, right? Most people think that experience is important, right? You've seen on the infographic, right? And outside of New York, they're willing to consider you as a first-year teacher. You go there, you establish yourself, you have a great reputation 3 to 5 years later, and if you really want to live in the New York area, you come back with 5 years of experience, you are golden. There are so few teachers with 5 years of experience applying to these schools who have good records, right, in this New York area.
And the experience of being out of town itself
also
broadens you, and it changes right. Who you are, and you bring something very different to that school in the New York area that the other Rebbeimah school don't have.
You can also more easily at times build a reputation outside of town, ONY, than you can here, and also you get to try a lot more things because there isn't as much talent available. Then you might get to try if you're in a very densely competitive area such as this one.
Great.
That's what I did. I went for 2 years out of town. I did it for both for the rabbinate and for chinuch, and it was a tremendous experience for me. My life is totally different. I'm a totally different person because of the 2 years I spent in Charleston, South Carolina. Totally, it's definitely true. Just in terms of the balance question. It's very hard. It's very hard to balance two jobs. I'm officially full-time at TABC. I work there until about 1:30 every day. I'm officially part-time at RENA. But when you have one of these, right, so you're full-time everywhere.
Right.
That's the end. You're not really part-time anywhere. Because I'm not in TABC all day doesn't mean I don't get asked to go on school trips, and it doesn't mean I'm the chesed coordinator. So I have to run chesed trips for 3 days somewhere, and it doesn't mean that, right? I'm not really off the hook for anything. There's a program on a Thursday night. They want me to be... You're asked to do everything for everybody, and it doesn't really matter that you're, I guess I'm time and a half. I go all day. I work till about 12 o'clock every night doing work for the most part. But again, I like what I do. I love what I do. So that's okay. And I find time to relax and to take breaks. I have a chavrus in the middle of the day. I have the opportunity. I leave school at 1:30. I go daven mincha. I have a chavrus from two to three every day. And at 3 o'clock, I then pick up with shul work. And I do that throughout the rest of the day and the night. It's a hard balance, but it's very, very enriching. I have many of my talmidim in school on my children of my baal batim in shul. I have an opportunity, and when you're just a rabbi, so your day is kind of open-ended and can be a little bit scary for people. When you have every day 7:40, you got to be a davening. You have a schedule for the first half of the day, and the second half of the day is a little open. That provides a very nice opportunity to kind of be balanced. And it's also nice to have different things during the day. You're not every day doing the same thing. You're every day doing something different, and that really has been enriching for me. Like I said, there are challenges. You get pulled by everybody, and you have every school, every shul, and every school. Hopefully, if you're successful, wants you to do more. Right, certainly the school, this is my first year in TABC. The more you do, the more they want. If you do well, hopefully they want you to do more. And then you have to balance that. Well, I can't because of shul. You don't want to tell them that. I can't because of shul. It's embarrassing. Because what do you mean? You work here. And when you're in the shul, you don't want to say, well, I can't because of school. You don't want to feel that. But, again, both in terms of experience, I enjoy doing both things. But certainly in terms of financially. Right? The fact that I have the second job, my house is the shul's house. I live in the shul's house. That's a big financial burden that's taken off my plate because I work in the shul. I get paid in the shul also. But the combining those two jobs financially obviously helps a lot as well. And my wife works as well to make sure that we're able to at least make ends meet.
How much is the starting salary for the rabbi?
That's a great question.
$7 million.
$7 million. That's a good question. I'd say full-time... A full-time assistant rabbi somewhere, depending on town, out of town, maybe somewhere between $50,000 and $75,000 a year. I'd say full-time assistant rabbi. And when you're part-time, so it becomes different, somewhere between, $25,000 and $40,000. But again, every shul recognizes if you can live in, if you're an assistant rabbi on the Upper West Side, so they know they have to pay for you to live somewhere. Same thing in Teaneck. If you're going to live in Teaneck, so you pay $3,000 a month for a house. So they know they have to provide you with a house. Things like that. So they make sure, the shuls make sure at least that you are baseline covered.
Anyone, we know that a lot of guys have to go to Shear soon, so don't feel bad if you have to leave, if you have to walk out.
I'll be insulted.
We can stay. I can stay for a few minutes.
But the rest of the program is being recorded still, so anything that you miss, you can listen to the end. But if you need to finish up and you need to go, you can feel free. What was your follow-up question?
Yeah, when can one expect to get a corporate job? Can you get a corporate job at 24?
It depends. Is that more of a public question? We should
Why don't we? Yeah. Public question.
Public question. We do that. But
Josh.
Can you speak? Maybe each of you one or two points. How you give your family time so that some of us might be familiar with the syndrome of the rabbi's sons or the rabbi's kids time, right? And being neglected by the devotion to the community, which is totally understandable, but. Each of you
could
give one or two points.
So, I have, thank God, I have five kids. And before I answer the question, I'd like to frame it this way. I think that's a challenge. It's not just a challenge for this profession. It's a challenge that is actually for any profession. Right? So, we're talking about how much time you have to spend. He's working until 12 o'clock at night. Everybody's working at 12 o'clock at night. I mean, not everybody, but a lot. Professions are very demanding. I have a very close friend. He's on a plane once or twice every week. He's on a plane every... Now, he happens to do a magnificent job managing his relationship with his family. He does a magnificent job of it. But that's something that you have to... I'd say the first place to start is by recognizing that it is a very important responsibility. If it becomes this is what I do when I have nothing else going on, right? You become a Harry Chapin tragedy. Okay, that's what happens. Okay, so you have to make sure to like the same as your relationship with your wife. You know, you think, well, we're all learning guys. We're all, you know, we're going to go about things the right way, the way that this Rebbe taught me, that Rebbe taught me. But if you are so focused on everything else. That means you're not focused on some of the things you need to. What some people do, which I'm not so good at, but it's a good thing, is they make certain rules. There's certain times which are chok velo yavar inviolate, and I on Shabbos afternoon from 2 to 3, I sit with this kid and we talk about his week and we play Monopoly and whatever it is. And you say, gee, it's only now you only give that kid an hour a week. How have I? So it's a very, very important to have the discipline both to spend time with your children, spend time with your wife, regardless of what profession you go into. However, there is a certain benefit in that it's a double-edged sword, but there's a benefit that because you spend your day honing your skills on how to deal with kids, right, you now have a certain ability to help your children that other parents may not. Then again, you have to be careful when you're treating your kids to make sure that, you know, what you don't say to the other kids that you're saying all day that you like to say to them, you don't say to your kids. You know what I'm saying? So that's a very important challenge. It all starts with the discipline of first recognizing that's a challenge, which you clearly did, and making sure that that's something that you don't forget.
Right. So to add on to what Matechin said, like in my own personal experience, because I'm not going to speak for what everyone should do, I get up and daven earlier than I normally would. So that I can be home to wake my kids up, spend that hour with them in the morning, and take them to the bus, right? We have breakfast together every day. That's an important hour for me. When I get home at 6 o'clock, on average, 1 hour is for my kids till they're in bed. I do not schedule phone calls or anything from that time. And then I work for maybe another couple of hours, and my wife always gets another hour in the evening, almost always, right, for us to spend together.
My wife doesn't want that hour.
Right. So it's a personal experience, right? I happen to be like a very...
I got 5 minutes for you. Let's make it.
I'm like a hyper-organized kind of guy, so that's how I've scheduled my own life, right? I have 3 periods during my day that are only family time, and they sound short, right? But they're very meaningful for me. I'm not on my phone. I'm not on my computer. I'm just with my family at that time. Shabbos is for my family, right? I don't usually ever work on Shabbos. Kids have a Shabbaton or whatever, and that's it. And Sunday, there's always something we do with the family together. I might be working on a Sunday, but I always try to make sure that there's some time on a Sunday for my family. So that's how I balance it.
Same thing. Even though, yes, I'm out at night giving shiurim sometimes, and I'm out or with a school thing where I have to go away, so I'm on a school trip. But bottom line is, I'm home at 5 o'clock every day, and my kids come home. I'm home with my kids from 5 till they go to sleep. I take my phone. Someone gave me this data. I take my phone, like the ringer on, because I sometimes have to answer emergencies, and I place it on the shelf. And I don't pick it in my pocket. And I'm with my kids from 5 until I help them prepare dinner. I help them take a bath, go to sleep. They have each kid has special time. They have me or my wife. And then after they go to sleep, me and my wife usually have dinner separately on our own. My kids are still little at 5, 3, and 1. So we still sit down. Either we have dinner with them, depending on the day, or we'll sit by ourselves for half hour, 45 minutes afterwards. So when I say I work till late at night, it's because I don't get started again until 9, 9:15. Until like, you know, I really stop working from 5, 5:30, depending on the day, till about 8:30, 9 o'clock. At that point, then I go back to work, and, you know, I go to my dungeon in the basement, and I work till, you know, whatever, till I'm finished. Some nights I'm done at 11, and I can relax a little bit and go to sleep, but in a lot of nights I work late. But again, I do that because, again, I'm able to carve out that time, which I think is very, very important. And the truth is, my friends who are accountants and dentists and other things, so they're home at 7:30. They're home at 8 o'clock. So, you know, maybe I'm busy, maybe, yeah, Sundays, some have a simcha, some I don't. Saturday night, I never go out. Me and my wife have been Saturday night together always, unless there's like something crazy. But generally, I'm assistant rabbi. I have an opportunity. I don't answer crazy emergencies all the time. That's usually the rabbi. If someone passes away, the rabbi does that. I will. If the rabbi's away, I'm on. But I'm dealing with shilohs, but I'm not dealing with emergencies. So on a Saturday night, I can basically spend time with my wife. We do something. We hang out at home.
Force yourself, even if you're tired. Even if you're tired. The kid has a baseball game. Well, yep. even if they crawl to it, force yourselves.
And I'll just point out, right? Like when we think about other professions, they're actually more busy than I am. I find.
Yeah.
I was on the Spanish bus the other night going home. I have a carpal neural leg, but it's technically the Spanish bus company. That's what their legitimate name is. It's on the side, and look it up online. I can't understand it because it's in Spanish, but that's their technical name. Anyway, and I saw a friend of mine get on the bus. He lives next door to me in Teaneck. And I said, oh, did you have a late night? He's like, what do you mean? It was 10 o'clock. I said, what do you mean? This is when I normally come home. He's a lawyer, right? And he's been in the field for, you know, he's not like a beginning lawyer so that he's just trying to make his way. He's been doing this for 12 years already. And I said, this is when you normally get home? Well, you must go to work late. He's like, oh, I'm usually in the office before 9. So that hits a normal night for a man. What about Sundays? You must go, no, I'm usually working on Sundays too. Right? So this field is not any different. In fact, it could be in some ways better because school ends at 5 o'clock usually, or 4 o'clock, or 3:30, whatever it is. And you do have that time kind of in the afternoon that you can dedicate to your family as long as you're able to set aside that time.
Can we go to the securing a job, the jobs for you section, specifically the job market? And questions number 2 and 4.
All righty. What is the job market like for Jewish educators? In the New York area, fiercely competitive. And I use that word not lightly. Right? You have to be the best of the best in personality, in credentials, in training and experience to get a good job here. Right? In the types of schools you want to work in, I'll add. Right? There are jobs and schools that you might really not want to work in, and I really mean it. Right, where you could get a job with little credentials and little experience, etc. Outside the New York area, as we said before, it is easier to get a job. It's still competitive, and it's a mazel tov to anyone who gets a job out of town because you need to actually have talent. You can't just be a schlub off the street. You have to be able to do something, but you don't have to have as much experience in order to qualify to be considered outside of New York. Currently, right, the school partnership that I work for runs a job board called Chinuch Link. How many of you know about it? Okay, that's not enough. Okay, you need to get on this board. It's specifically for jobs in Jewish schools, mostly teaching jobs, also sometimes administrative jobs. We currently have 152 jobs listed for Jewish schools around the country, okay, representing approximately 100 schools who are listing jobs right now that are open, okay? On average, as it says here, about 30 resumes are submitted for each job. Half of those go directly in the trash because they don't qualify, right? That's this trash can image here. And half of them get some kind of consideration, okay? Most people who are looking for jobs in Chinuch that are half normal get a job in the year that they're looking for a job. right? There's a good chance that you will find the job. However, if you say, I want to teach high school boys in a boys-only school at one of these three schools, you're probably not going to get a job. You need to be expansive about what you're able to consider as your wheelhouse, so to speak, where you will consider working. Middle school can also be amazing. You might want to even consider elementary school if that's not what you were originally considering. It's a great place to teach, right? You might want to consider schools you might not otherwise have considered. You might really want to strongly consider moving outside the New York area, or maybe just 2 hours outside, West Hartford, Philadelphia, these areas where you can, if you're dating, right? If you want to have a date on a Thursday night, class finishes at 4, you're here by 6:30, right? Hopefully you've showered for the date. Right, there are places.
Some of these guys, I'm not sure.
Right, so I really want you to strongly consider that. Sometimes it can be more difficult if you're married already, or you're getting married, and your wife or your fiance has a job in the New York area in a different field, right, or even in Chinuch, and then you're stuck. You got to be here also. That can be more difficult, and that's why it's important to consider a wider application pool. Like, what am I really considering? I want to do. You had a question.
Are all outside of place all places outside of New York the same, like Chicago, LA?
It's, you know that New Yorker cartoon?
LA's warmer.
He's not saying.
So there's that old New Yorker cartoon, which is like how New Yorkers see the world, and it's like Manhattan, and then like the world falls off, right? Like there's nothing out there. The cities are each very, very, very different, right? Chicago and LA are expensive, right? So your money doesn't go as far there, but they have more robust Jewish communities. However, competition for jobs is not as fierce out there. They are looking for people like you. They want YU guys. They really, really do. Because guess who's applying for the jobs for Jewish studies positions in most of those schools?
Lakewood.
Mostly Lakewood guys. Those are the guys who, for whatever reason, are willing to take a risk and go out of town. Those are the guys who are changing the Jewish world now, because you all want to stay here. Right? If you really want to change the world, leave New York for 5 years. Right? And I know we keep harping on this point, but it's really, really, really true. And it will help me greatly, because then the schools out of town will be so happy with me that you guys took jobs out of town. Cleveland, Houston, Dallas, Columbus, Memphis, Florida. There's a bunch of places in Florida. What?
Detroit.
There we go. Right there. There are tons of what we call smaller Jewish communities that have a decent infrastructure. Right? Detroit's got a great pizza shop. right, have a decent infrastructure. It's definitely different from what you'll see here, that can support your family and that have schools that are great places to start your career. Does that answer your question?
Yeah. I think.
Oh, sorry.
Okay. Yeah, do you think the older you get in the field of education, especially with classroom education, potentially hurts your chances of having job security and having like a new business in the school later, right?
No.
What, can you repeat that question?
He wants to know.
He said that I heard the word older. I my ears.
No, I guess the question is: you see, at least, I've seen that it's obviously easier for younger people to get jobs in the younger than, or people who are a little bit younger, to have those connections with the kids. Do you see that the older they get, you know, the harder it is for them to hold on to the job or find a job?
That's an interesting question. So.
What if you don't have a specific skill set or degree or something like that?
So the answer is it depends. It depends on who you are and your abilities. I don't think it's necessarily a function of age. Like, you come in younger, right? So you guys you're all dynamos. You all got great energy, you all have great personality, and you all have been learning seriously for whatever number of years. And you have no clue how to manage a classroom. You don't have a clue how to teach, right? So now you come in, and so you're gonna stumble a little bit. There's no shame in that, by the way. You know, you're gonna stumble. As you get older, you develop more skills. As you get older, you might have developed new approaches. But what's very important. I've only been teaching an SAR for 3 years. I've only been teaching for a very, very long time. You can't be stagnant in your approach. Because even if what you're doing worked really well with a 13-year-old 5 years ago, today's 13-year-old is very different than that 13-year-old was. Now, the age disparity doesn't preclude you from being an effective mechanic. In fact, your experience can be very, very valuable. What you have to be very careful of is that you become, you're in a rut, and you're just replaying the same video of you every year. Things are changing. The kids are changing. Technology is changing. Approaches to learning are changing. You, as long as you're observant and you're looking at the new things and you're saying, well, this works, this doesn't work, this I can use, this I can't use, trying to incorporate the best of that which is available to you, and that you make sure to relate to your students. Now you keep in, most of a relationship is just about having the dialogue. It's not about, gee, I saw that really, you know, that really cool movie that, you know, and that old teacher didn't see that movie. Right? They might respect the teacher because the teacher isn't a peer, because that teacher has a certain experience, that teacher has a certain aura and project a certain image that can be very, very valuable. So the answer to your question is, the answer is what Rabbi Avishur said, and the answer is no, but this is the reason why. As long as you're on top of your game, your experience is going to make you more valuable, as long as you don't forget the important things that brought you to that point in the first place.
If you love kids and you stay current, then being older does not preclude you from from making meaningful relationships and staying really important to the school.
One other thing I just say in general, and I think it's very helpful, and I mean it in the right way, and not in the. It's very important to start making connections. It's very important to start getting opportunities in schools, opportunities in schools, in camps. You want to start meeting people, because the way I've gotten a lot of my jobs, the way I know a lot of people have gotten their jobs, they knew somebody in a camp, they knew somebody they worked for in a shul, someone made a phone call. It happens to be, it's not just who you know at all, it has to be who you are, but who you know helps. It helps if someone can make a phone call for you and say, I know this guy, he's a great guy, he ran, you know, chinuch programs at my camp for 4 years, he's a fantastic person, he's great with kids, he makes a phone call to the principal, that makes a big difference for you. If you've had no experience, if you never met anybody, so then when they come in and say, who can I call? I don't know, you can call my Rebbe from Yeshiva, so that's great, but it's not going to go very far. As much as, you know, a phone call from Rosh Yeshiva is nice, Rosh Yeshiva doesn't know much about what you do outside of cheer. So the more you make connections and the more you get experience in schools or with people in chinuch, the more connections you have, and it really helps your opportunity at Babel.
So I wanted to answer this question that Rick had mentioned, right? Developing specific skills or an area of expertise. This goes back to, I think, what you said earlier about always being a learner, right? You will become stagnant very, very quickly in this field if you are not learning new things every year, right? The new thing is educational technology, what we call 21st century learning. And you don't have to be an expert in that, but you have to become conversant in that. And there are ways to do that that are not just degree programs. We offer certificate programs. There are also lots of other programs. We're not the only providers of that kind of service. You want to stay on that. So if you had to pick up like three areas that you really wanted to get familiar with before entering the field, educational technology, special needs, and differentiated instruction, those might actually be totally foreign terms to you, especially the last one. Right, but those are important areas. If you can gain some expertise in those things, the new normal in schools is that most of the kids have some kind of learning difference. Right, it used to be there was like a special needs pull-out person who would take the kid out of your class who you thought wasn't as smart as you. Right, now he's running a business somewhere and you're working for him or something. Right, that we don't do that model anymore. Right, everyone has to have some kind of special training in how to deal with kids with learning differences. Right, and that number of kids is increasing every year. Right, just ask, you know, a bunch of your friends, parents, like how many of them know kids who are on medication, right? It's like more than 50% now. It's crazy. The kids are all medicated because they all have special needs, right? So it's not so special anymore. So you need to be trained for that. As I said earlier, right, learning secular studies at a college level or in some other way can be incredibly valuable to you. You don't need a PhD to be a department head, but it can be valuable. Right? If you have the opportunity to earn a PhD in something, do it. If you can get an MBA, I think that's the most underrepresented degree in education, which is probably the most necessary. How many of you have aspirations to be an administrator one day? Thinking about it, maybe. Okay. Totally different skill set than being a teacher. I don't think you can really be an effective administrator if you haven't taught in the classroom, because you'll have no street cred. But it's a totally different skill set. As I mentioned earlier at the beginning of our talk, right? You're running a business. It's a $5 million enterprise, right, with 150 to 200 customers and 40 employees. It's a big, big deal. And if you don't know what it means to run a school and be a professional, you will not succeed. It's called the Jewish Day School Movement because people are constantly moving around from job to job. You know why? Because they're not successful. They don't know what it takes to succeed. They don't even know what they don't know. So your job now, as a person entering the field, is to find out what you don't know and then learn that, right? Now, there's two steps, like, what don't I know? And then how can I figure out how to learn that that I don't know? So yes, important to build those skill sets. I also want to say that you don't need to become an administrator to make a great impact on the field and to earn a significant living. Some of the top rabbis in different schools are earning well over six figures, right? Because they've been teaching for 15, 20 years. And they're earning, in some cases, as much as administrators are earning. So you don't need to leave the classroom. If that's your sweet spot, that's what you're really good at, you don't have to leave the classroom in order to live a better life.
Can we talk about the last question for what are some of the second jobs that other teachers do know? And what skills do we need to develop for yourself also?
This is actually an important point. Your second job doesn't necessarily have to be in the same profession as your first job. So I have three jobs. I teach at SAR. That's my, without question, my primary job. I teach one night a week at KJ. I teach adults who didn't have the opportunity to go to get a Jewish education when they were younger. And I also work in property and casualty insurance. And that's a very, very important. That's very, very important for me. The reason it works well for me, it's a little tricky. The reason it works well for me is because of my business background, as having gone to law school and worked in all the jobs I did. I understand the business. My experience enables me to maybe give advice that other people who do this wouldn't be able to give. And it's something that I find very, very interesting. It's also a profession that I can, for the most part, manage my time. What most people in this profession do is they spend the whole day selling. I don't do a lot of selling. I do a lot of servicing. So whatever can be done after hours, I do that. I can take a phone call during the day or write an email or two or whatever it is I need to do when I have a break. And for me, that this profession works very, very, very well. But again, that's for me. I wouldn't say, he's selling insurance, therefore I should sell insurance. Right? It also depends on what kind of insurance. Right? Life insurance is a very different business than the one I'm in. And then life insurance, you constantly have to be pushing, or you're not going to get anywhere. But if you're somebody who has an interest in computers, or you're somebody who has an interest in accounting, or whatever the profession, whatever it is that you're studying, you don't have to be in the profession. You don't have to be a teacher and then a teacher and then a teacher. And sometimes it's actually very helpful because the diversity of experiences keeps it fresh for you. Right? So one of the things it's for everybody is always in any profession is pace. That's a challenge. And if you're doing different things, there's an inherent change of pace in your day, which can be very, very, very can be very helpful to you. So that's what some people do. I know a guy who does accounting on the side, or guys who do programming, guys who do networking. Again, Siyata Deshmaya is obviously what determines these things. But besides that, is think about what you like, keep your contacts in those areas, and also there's it's something to do just because it's something. And besides the fact that it provides additional areas of income, it also enables you to grow and expand your mind in ways that the change of pace could keep you steady and at ease.
All right, last question. the first miscellaneous question. What are the most important? What's the most important thing you needed to learn after entering the field that you weren't prepared for prior to becoming a teacher?
Classroom management, number one.
How do you
like every first year, every I think who has this experience, classroom management is the number one most difficult challenge I've had. I'm a first year Rebbe right now. Gotten Baruch Hashem much much better as the years gone on. Beginning, you haven't experienced some things that you experience. You don't want to be especially your first year. You don't know the guys, right, or the girls. With girls, it's much easier. I taught about Torah also, much easier. Something to think about. Classroom management is much less an issue with girls. You just have to be careful not to embarrass them. But with boys, and especially with all boys school, probably the fiercest challenge in classroom management. You have to balance, you can't be their friend, and you have to balance being someone that they respect with being someone who can relate to them. That's not really something, so I don't know how, I'm sure they teach it in Israeli, but you're really going to learn it by...
You can't teach classroom management.
You just have to get in. You get in, and it's hard a little bit at the beginning, but I'm so excited for next year to start anew with a new group of students that you're now you know exactly what you have to do, you know exactly how to attack them. But for me, that's been a great challenge for sure.
Rabbi Kern is totally right. The most difficult thing for any new teacher is classroom management, and you can't learn it without doing it. The bottom line. I can teach you hours and hours about how to manage your classroom and how to plan your lessons so that the students will be busy all the time. It's not going to work until you get in the classroom. So whatever experience you can get working with kids in semi-formal settings now, whether it be as a chinuch rebbe in a camp or whatever it's going to be, right? Get that experience. And also, as Robert Kron said earlier, go visit schools. They're quite happy to have you come sit in for the most part, especially MTA, which is right here. Just go sit in and watch the teacher. So, Rabbi Talbis, who's a good teacher that I can watch?
Go watch Rabbi Butler.
Fine.
Go watch Rabbi Butler. I learned more from watching Rabbi Gary Butler at MTA than I learned anything else in Hinnom. Bottom line. I know many other quality teachers as well. That's one person who's been...
Just watch what they're doing in the class. And you're not going to imitate them because every person's different, but that's what you got to do.
I'm not sure. I would say certainly classroom management is definitely, without question, that's the biggest challenge that's faced. It's
second.
I would say for me, one of the challenges was because I functioned differently in prior professions, was knowing how to be, even if you're a teacher and you're in your classroom, you're still part of a team. And the certain individuality that you want to introduce into your classroom and certain goals that you have personally. But there's also a balance that has to be reached where what's the school trying to accomplish? Making sure you understand the goals of the school. Making sure you're sharing with other people who might be teaching the same subjects. You might never be in the same room with that person unless you make the effort to do so. But it's very, very important to understand that even though you're a teacher, you're on an island, it's your classroom, you're really part of a larger group and network. And having that communication, if you're just because your administrator hasn't come over to you, doesn't mean you should be going over to have that... Have to initiate that communication. The dialogue requires two parties. Somebody's got to start the conversation. It can't always be you thinking, well, I'm on the bottom of the totem pole. If somebody doesn't come to speak to me, therefore, you know, I don't have a responsibility to communicate. It's like any other profession. Make sure that you're out there. Make sure you recognize your part of the team. Make sure to communicate to those who are your peers and also as your administrators as well.
Great point.
Thank you so much, everyone.